I have often thought that one of the reasons I'm good at what I do is because I have personally experienced so many of the conditions that I address in my office today. It certainly helps to have an understanding of what it actually feels like to be in your client's position. And it's even better to have had some personal success with using the techniques that I teach to solve my own issues. And so it goes with panic attacks. I know so much about them because I have experienced them myself and have dealt with them and all the aftermath that they cause. And I have developed specific, customized cognitive behavioral techniques to, first and foremost, take care of my own issues successfully, and then to be able to teach them to my clients. So I know that they work. First of all, from all of the empirical data supporting these techniques for over 60 years, and from successfully using them in my own life to deal with my own issues. In fact, the very reason that I'm in this position as a therapist is because these techniques were so awesomely effective in changing just about everything in my own life. So, without further ado, here's my story. I've been involved in public speaking for pretty much my entire professional career. My first career choice was to be a professional baseball player. Now, that ship sailed pretty early in my pursuit. By the time I was even looking at colleges, I knew professional baseball wasn't going to happen, but I still wanted to play some college ball. But just making a college team in my home state of Southern California, the mecca for baseball in the United States, I probably wasn't even going to make it on a college team. And I realized that I had a much better chance of playing some college ball if I was willing to relocate to the Midwest. And that's what landed me in southern Minnesota. Now, baseball programs at Midwest colleges are significantly lower caliber programs than out in sunny Southern California. Of course they are. In Minnesota, the weather gets cold pretty early and stays cold for a really long time. The spring is very short, as is the fall, so baseball is not nearly as big a deal as football or basketball. So I was talented enough, coming from California, to make a team and play baseball at a small private college in southern Minnesota. So if I couldn't play baseball for a living, I at least wanted to be able to coach baseball, as well as other sports. And this is what led me to an education major with a minor in athletics, physical education, and athletic administration. Ultimately, that landed me in Fort Wayne, Indiana in 1983 as administrator of a very small private school, getting to do virtually everything I wanted. And along with that came plenty of opportunities to speak publicly. So I got pretty comfortable speaking in front of other people. And although there were always a little bit of nerves and jitters, it was just a good kind of nervousness. And I always enjoyed the adrenaline rush of getting on stage and performing. But all of that changed one day. I was a young guy in my mid-30s, and quite honestly, I think I thought I was pretty much bulletproof. I could stay out late with the guys, watching Sunday night football and drinking beer, and then get up Monday and pull it off well, doing all my duties and responsibilities with no problems whatsoever. With enough caffeine and a bit of nicotine, I could easily get through the day. One Monday morning, I woke up with, admittedly, a slight hangover, and what I thought was perhaps a cold coming on. So I popped a few cold pills with pseudoephedrine, along with my morning coffee, and stuffed the rest of those pills in my pocket and headed off to work. Now, as a baseball player, I hate to admit it, but I had picked up the nasty habit of chewing tobacco. So I made sure that I had a fresh can of chew in my pocket to keep me amped up all throughout the morning and the rest of the day. I had gotten so good at chewing tobacco that I could hide it pretty well. At the time, I was chewing those Skoal Bandits, those nice little pouches with tobacco inside, and I could put one of those between my cheek and gum toward the back of my mouth, and nobody even knew I had it in. So between the caffeine, the nicotine, and the pseudoephedrine, I was cranking through the morning pretty well. By afternoon, I was dragging a little bit, so I did more of the same. Took some more pseudoephedrine, a little more caffeine, a little more nicotine, and I was good to go. Well, it just so happens that that afternoon, I had a presentation to give. It was a presentation I'd given dozens of times, no big deal. I practically had it memorized, so I didn't even think twice about it. Taking the stage that evening, I had my normal pre-presentation jitters that I would usually get, and they would last a few minutes and then go away completely, and then everything would be fine. And everything seemed to be going just fine until about halfway through my presentation, when all of a sudden I noticed my heart beating pretty rapidly. That's kind of weird, I thought, and I just tried to shake it off and keep going. But it seemed like it kept getting faster and faster. And then I found myself feeling kind of short of breath. Now I knew something weird was going on. I tried to focus on my material, but it seemed like the walls were closing in, and I was getting tunnel vision. And then everything seemed to be strangely brighter, as if the lights had been turned up all of a sudden. I noticed I was feeling a little bit lightheaded, and my chest was starting to feel a little tight. At this point, I completely lost my train of thought, and as I was staring at the screen, I felt frozen. It seemed like an eternity, but it was probably only a matter of minutes before my audience knew something was up. All I could think about was, I gotta get out of here. I need some air. I looked up at my audience, and all I could get out of my mouth was, I don't feel so good. I think I need to sit down. There was a chair on the stage next to the podium, so I sat down, and one of the members of the audience quickly came up, got me some water, and I was hoping that it would pass quickly, and I would be able to get back on stage and finish my presentation. Yeah, that didn't happen. The longer I sat there, the worse I felt. She kept asking me if I was okay, and I kept telling her, I think so. She asked if she should call an ambulance. No, don't do that. Not yet. Just let me sit here for a minute. After what seemed like an eternity of silence and awkwardness, she finally asked me if I thought she should send everybody home. And in one of my most embarrassing moments that I can ever remember, I had to say yes. Now my thoughts turned to whether or not I was really having a stroke or a heart attack. All kinds of thoughts run through your mind in those moments. Of course, the last thing I really wanted to do was call an ambulance. But I didn't particularly want to die of a heart attack right on the spot either. I had this insatiable desire to just get outside. I felt trapped, even though I was in a very spacious auditorium. Now, the kind lady who was helping me offered to take care of everything, getting the building locked up. She just told me, go take care of yourself. So I grabbed my things and I made a beeline for my car. And I sat there in my car, phone in my hand, 911 queued up and ready to dial if I started to lose consciousness or something crazy like that, which, of course, I never did. After what seemed like hours, it was actually about 30 minutes, I started to feel myself calming down a bit. I still felt pretty weird, but I decided to try and drive home anyway. There was a hospital approximately halfway between my location and my home, so I reasoned if things got worse, I would just turn towards the ER. If they didn't, I would continue on home. At the halfway point, I was relatively sure I wasn't dying, so I continued on home. When I got home, I of course told my wife what had happened, and she immediately spit out, "Sounds like a panic attack," and I really couldn't dispute that. I was starting to come to that conclusion on my own. Now, normally, at that time of the night, I would have been hungry, but strangely, my appetite was zero. I was wiped out. I didn't eat anything, and I fell asleep during the first quarter of the Monday night football game. That never happens. When I woke up the next day, the cold that I thought I had coming on had dissipated, and I actually felt pretty good, except for that nagging memory, the rumination of the previous evening. It almost felt surreal. Like, did it really happen? But of course, it did. I felt horribly embarrassed. And in my mind, I imagined that the people who had been there at that event were telling their friends all about what had happened, making a big joke out of it. I hoped I would never run into any of them ever again. How could I explain to them that it was simply my anxiety? On the one hand, I was happy to know that it was just a panic attack, but on the other hand, I was still horribly embarrassed and hoping against hope that it would never, ever happen again. And being the scientist I am at heart, I was ferociously researching panic attacks. And from all the information I found, I could piece together pretty much what had happened. Now, I didn't know the physiology nearly as well as I know it today, but it did make sense to me that I was doing all of the things that likely could trigger such a situation. I was hungover, dehydrated, pumping myself full of nicotine, caffeine, pseudoephedrine, and then throwing on top of that the usual minor escalations of the nervous system prior to giving a speech. It just all made sense. That had just tipped me over the edge. Problem solved, or so I thought.